Welcome everyone to the Greg's Garage Pod with co-host Jason Pridmore. Greg and Jason on the line. MotoGP winding down. Final race of the season coming up. Jason, how's life out there in Cali for you? What's news for in your world or whatever?
It's great. It's awesome. I can't believe it's November. It's so weird to think that we got Thanksgiving in a week and, we're coming to the end of another year. Bikes were on track yesterday and the day before, I believe, with some World Superbike testing, but we got last round of MotoGP, even though the championship's wrapped up, but all is good out here. I'm doing some riding. I was riding last weekend. Going to go do some riding tomorrow and Monday. So yeah, good, G-Dub.
That's good, man. Well, let's go ahead and get this thing rolling because we're going to start things off with some news presented by Arai. Hey, Jay, did you know that all Arai helmets are lined with an antimicrobial material? It is true. The interior liner gives you odor resistance, also dirt resistance, and those antimicrobials that you love so much. You can stay fresher longer and enjoy a comfortable ride in the latest Arai. So go check out ArayAmericas.com, pick up what you like, and head down to your local dealer for fitment or grab a new lid, ArayAmericas.com. Well, Jay, I'll tell you what, I'm actually headed to Pennsylvania on November 10th because on the 11th, they're going to do Arai News live on YouTube. I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but that'll be pretty fun.
That'd be great. When are you going? When is that?
December 11th. I think it's Friday, yep. December 11th. They'll be doing it live, and it's going to be myself and Brian Weston in the studio. Part of the thing, they want me to teach him how to do interviews, and I have no idea how to do that, but it should be pretty fun. All right, so Jay, in the news, MotoGP's race, obviously final race of 2020 is happening this weekend in Portugal, but last week, Red Bull KTM Tech 3's Iker Lekuona tested positive for COVID-19, so this weekend, you're going to see KTM test rider Mika Kallio back in action. Yeah, I know we'd all love to see Danny Pedrosa on that bike, but Mika Kallio is the guy to fill in. Any comments about Mika?
It was funny because we were just talking about him the other day here about like whatever happened to Mika Kallio, because don't really even hear about him still testing. And if you remember when he went and tested for them, he actually got thrown into a couple Grand Prix and really he wanted to race. That's what he wanted to do. And but really haven't heard much from him. So yeah, really strange about Lekuona, missing two rounds in Spain and then obviously missing this one. So too bad. I thought he might have been able to get back on the bike. Interesting first season for him and kind of a bummer way to finish it.
Yeah, I thought he had a great debut season in a weird year. For all the riders that debuted this year, even in World Superbike, it's been a crazy year for them for sure. Yep. Well, Jason, Welshman Chaz Davis, one of our boys of World Superbike fame, is being linked to the vacant Aprilia factory MotoGP seat. That, of course, was left vacant after a four-year ban for Andrea Iannone. If you don't know about that, go read about it. Aprilia CEO said in an on-air interview last week that all options are being looked at, including riders from Moto2 and World Superbike. And he actually singled out Garrett Gerloff's performance at Valencia 1. But it's Davis' name is being thrown around. So what do you think about Chaz on a factory Aprilia in MotoGP?
I think when you look at it big picture-wise, you can sit there and you think Chaz had a pretty good career, obviously, in Superbike. He's been around a while. Could be an opportunity for him to go prove himself on another level. That said, I haven't seen too many guys go to the Aprilia effort and shine. So I would have liked to have seen maybe Chaz on something that is a little bit more proven. It'll be interesting to see. I've read some stuff about the Go 11 team and get, with the Ducati support that they get, keeping him on a Ducati still in World Superbike. But it's a toss up. I think there's good and there's bad to it. The Aprilia seems like it's kind of turned a corner a little bit. There's a lot of controversy over test riders and things like that moving forward. It'd be nice to see Aprilia get more on the map in MotoGP than they already are. And I'm a little bit torn in between if it's the best place for Chaz right now. I still think he wants to win races. So, if he had a chance to do that on a factory spec Go 11 Ducati, maybe that would be the better option to go win races, but not sure if that's on the table for him truthfully. So we'll see.
Yeah. Very interesting proposition putting him on that bike. It's not like going to Aprilia as a career ender. It's not that dramatic, but it's definitely not putting anybody up front and helping their career at the moment. But, you know, with Chaz's size, I don't know. It's one of those weird things where people are turning down the Aprilia factory ride, though, Jason. And how often do we see that? It just shows you the level of competitive equipment. There are riders that would rather go to a satellite team than or retire than go on an Aprilia. So,
or stay where they're at. I mean, a number of the Moto2 contenders, you've seen them go at go after. And I think that would play into a decision as well. You know, when if you're Chaz and you're sitting there looking at things, and you can, you know, they've been very outspoken about who they've offered the ride to and everybody that's turned it down. And I don't, you know, I think that a lot of people are sitting there waiting to see how good that bike could be. I think you got to remember too, all we've really seen is Aleix Espargaró on that bike. Iannone was, you know, I mean, he did good at Phillip Island at one race, but for the most part, Espargaró was, you know, Aleix was beating him most of the time. And we haven't really seen anybody get on that bike that's really been able to beat Aleix Espargaró week in and week out. So I think that there's a number of reasons why people are a little hesitant to go there.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Jay. Well, in World Superbike, there was a test over the past couple of days on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. Johnny Ray goes quickest on Wednesday on a, and I'm doing air quotes, a new ZX-10RR Kawasaki. It was really just a new engine and the new fairing, and that's all over the internet if you haven't seen it. It's pretty cool. The front of the new bike looks like a transformer. The bike itself won't be launched officially, I think, until the 23rd of this month, but you got a glimpse of what it's going to look like. He was able to do a 138.324. That was with the SEX. No, wait, the SCX, SEX. That's what it sounds like when Steve English says it. The SCX yeah. tire. That's their super soft, you know, qualifying tire. He was able to do that. As for our boy, Garrett Gerloff, he goes 39.1 on the 2021 spec machine. He rode the 19 on Tuesday in the morning, then he rode the 2020 and he was P1. And then he got on the 2021 most of the afternoon on the second day of testing. He goes fourth fastest, but he was about a second faster than he was in August at the same racetrack. I thought it was a good job that he pulled off. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, Garrett right now is on a roll. He probably wishes that the season would just keep going. That said, I think that they'll be back on bikes relatively quickly come the new season, and he'll be hungry. I mean, he was only, what, Greg, 0.2 or 0.3, I think, off of Top Rack. But he was kind of setting the pace early in this test. Both Kawasaki's did very well, I think, and discussing a couple things about those, you're exactly right about the motor. Definitely some significant motor development around off the bottom end as far as getting out of corners and some things like that. So there were some things that those guys were working on over there. Also, they saw the debut of Locatelli on the Yamaha, the World Super Sport Champion, I think did a pretty nice job mm-hmm. getting himself. I think he was sixth overall for the weekend. So he found himself in the 39s. Lucas Mias as well on the Pichetti Kawasaki. So, I mean, there were some guys there that were having their first rides on the bike. And so, you know, get that first winter test out of the way, and then all the engineers get back after Christmas and get ready for 2021.
Yeah, surprising no-shows at that test were Ducati and BMW. Not sure why they chose that, but I think Kawasaki was really looking forward to seeing what BMW, like the speed comparison. I know that they were right in line with what Honda was doing because Haslam and Bautista were there. So I think that made those guys pretty happy. Also, what was interesting, Jay, if you saw the live timing and scoring, Steve English had posted it up, so I was following it those 2 days. Stefan Bradl was there with the MotoGP bike, and at the end of the day, Johnny Ray went faster by like a couple hundredths of a second than Bradl went on the MotoGP bike. But I didn't see that time change much during the course of the week, those 2 days for Stefan Bradl. But it was interesting looking at the top speeds. The top speeds that I saw were somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 18 kilometers an hour quicker on a MotoGP bike than a World Superbike bike. So if you're saying you can do identical times with that speed difference, then you know where it was made up for sure. But it was pretty impressive to see you know, what those guys were testing at. And Gerloff looks like he is getting dialed in.
He is really getting dialed in. And going back to your point about the MotoGP bike at Jerez, I mean, how busy has Bradl been? He's gone two Grand Prix the last 2 weekends and then squeezes a test in between this past weekend in Spain and this next round in Portugal, last round of MotoGP. So, you know, when you look at the lap times, Greg, I'm not sure the significance in it, only because we don't really know what Brodel was there testing. We don't really know, obviously, if he ever went for a real time. He could have been there just testing stuff. So, you know, and the guy's got to be running low on the energy level right now, just with as much traveling as he's doing, as much racing as he's doing. Not sure where his motivation is. So probably a little bit skewed numbers, but it's always interesting when you make those comparisons, and they seem to always do it at Jerez.
They do. And by the way, if you were curious about the fastest outright time ever, it was 2020 by Maverick Vinales in a practice session. He did a 36.5, but the race pace for MotoGP bikes was around 38 flat. And so the fact that, you know, a world superbike is doing 38.3 is pretty dang impressive. It shows you that the gap is being closed. But again, they do it in different ways. I've told you the story before about Road Atlanta, formerly USA, way back in, I don't even know, 1997 or something. Fritz Kling, who was a tall guy on a Yamaha Monster versus Rich Oliver on a 250 at Road Atlanta. And those bikes ended up finishing, you know, Fritz beat him by a wheel length or a bike length each race. And the difference was Rich would pass him in turn one, lead him all the way outside, you know, to the exit of turn seven. And then here comes the big bike. So lap times similar, but doing it in completely different ways.
Yeah, with those guys doing their race lap time at like 38 flat on a MotoGP bike, you got to think that most of these superbike riders put on, you know, tires at the end of the day to try to go out and chase lap times, and they're at 38.3. So there's still a little bit of a difference there, but it's the comparison is always just a little bit too hard to try to really judge.
Yep. All right, Jay, you ready to get into MotoGP? The race over the
weekend?
Yeah,
what a weekend, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to call him or you want me to talk about it?
Well, I mean, we can just go ahead and say it that, you know, right off the bat, it was so much different, like it has been all year long from one weekend to the next. I mean, 2 weekends ago at Valencia, and before we get started, Greg, I don't know about you, but I was discussing this with somebody the other day. I kind of really enjoyed seeing back-to-back weekends at the same track during this kind of COVID weird season, because it really showed you how the engineers and the people behind the scenes really went to work to try to get their riders up to speed and get them even better for the following weekend in a couple of cases. And this past weekend, we see Morbidelli win with Jack Miller second, Paul Espargaró third again. But when you look at those first two guys, Morbidelli and Miller were some ways back the first weekend. And then on this particular weekend, Morbidelli and Miller, and what a show they put on last lap of the race. I mean, we'll talk about that in a second. Rins ends up fourth, Binder fifth, Oliveira sixth, and then newly crowned world champion Joan Mir did a tremendous job. We'll talk about him in a second. He comes across the line in seventh to collect his first world championship in MotoGP. Dovi ends up eighth. Aleix, Maverick Vinales 10th. Bagnaia, Rossi 14th, or 12th. Crutchlow, who announced that he'll be moving on to a Yamaha testing role, Brodel in 14th and Petrucci 15th. So, you know, again, Greg, the MotoGP results throw another kind of curveball at us as some, you know, new guys from the weekend prior got their stuff together and found a way to make it work in second weekend.
There's just so much chatter right now about tire temperature, internal tire temperature. They have, the riders have on their dashboard the ability to see what the temperature of the tire is internally. And I just think that it's, how do I explain it? It's like another factor, like you've got to keep it in this window. If not, you're going to roach the tire out. So people are looking now, well, and they talk about it post-race press conferences. Well, I could see that my tire temperature was going up or the tire pressure was increasing. And so I had to roll out of it. You know, it's hard to be in a draft. You've got to lead. So you got to create some space. And to me, it's just like, I think people are overthinking it at this point. I really do. And leaving it up to too much, you know, like video game stuff. And that's really, it seems like now, like with Franco, if you can get out front and you can have clean air, you can keep your tire temperature or your internal tire pressure in check and manage that you're in good shape. And if you watch the race now, you're not seeing as many clumps of riders riding, you know, so close anymore because everybody's worried about that garbage. And I think it's kind of ruining it a bit for me because, you know, maybe I'm a little bit old school. It's like, oh, I got it. So the data is out of spec. Just go ride the thing. But I thought that Franco did a fantastic job And when Miller started chucking stuff at him, I mean, let's talk about that last lap of the race. So Miller decides he had a big plan in his head, Jay, and he said this post-race that he was going to pass Morbidelli on the front straightaway and bang it into turn one. The thing that we knew about, because we're listening to the commentary and we're watching people do crazy things, is we knew that there was a gnarly tailwind into turn one. So when Miller comes out of the final corner, I'm thinking he's going to pass him on the front straightaway, but he better yard that thing down or he's going to go wide.
Yeah, which he did, to get it slowed down. And I thought he did a good job of doing that. But he opens the door a little bit for turn two. Morbidelli goes underneath him there. Miller fires back in turn four. Morbidelli fires back in turn five. And at that point, Valencia is actually a pretty difficult place to pass on. After you get out of turn six, there's a short straightaway with a little kink in the middle of it. But if you can get out of six pretty decent, you can defend going down into, I believe, would be turn eight. So, when you look at it, Morbidelli did a nice job there of being able to do that. And Jack did try a couple of shots there, but he just wasn't close enough to get it done. When you go back to looking at even what you're talking about with tire temperatures and things like that, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that you can see your tire temperatures and you can kind of base your race off it. The interesting part to me is the disparity between one manufacturer to if you look at any particular bike, could be the Kawi, the Suzuki's, could be the Yamaha's, could be the Ducati's. The Suzuki's you see kind of running around together, same pace all the time. Those guys are usually locked in around the same areas. But when you look at Morbidelli, he was 19 seconds ahead of the next Yamaha. So you got to think that somebody like Vinales trying to pass guys and trying to move forward, they talk about dirty air and the Yamaha having trouble passing. It would be interesting to see what the temps of his tires would have been during the course of the race over somebody like Morbidelli who's leading. And in conversely, you look at Jack Miller and you look at how far the next Ducati was behind him. That was some 8 seconds, I believe, with Dovi. So, when you look at some of that stuff, it's going to be rider adaptability of being able to control some of that temperature a little bit. But I also think sometimes being out front, setting the pace, you can run a more consistent kind of time because everybody else behind you is just battling all the time.
Yeah. And also, especially with the Yamaha, when you need to do it your way, have your lines and not have a Ducati dictate your lines, that was easier for Franco. He did say that definitely the rear tire was gone at the end of the race and he was just kind of hanging on, where Jack felt like he had a little more. So, it's
it just seemed like Jack couldn't get there earlier, could it? I mean, it just seemed like he was just in that area where he couldn't quite get there. And then with about six or seven to go, he started knocking off a tenth here, two tenths there, to where he got to the back of him coming into the final lap. But those guys put on a tremendous last lap. I mean, it was really, both riders were very appreciative of the fact that they raced each other clean. You could tell the disappointment in Jack Miller. And when you talk about disappointment, I mean, Paul Espargaro, I believe that was his fifth podium of the year. He's seen two of his other teammates win on that KTM. And this weekend will be his last race on that KTM as he moves over to Honda for 2021. There's a part of you that just kind of thinks, guys, is he gonna be able to get that win? And a guy that's been there since day one with KTM Red Bull team, I don't say I feel bad for the guy. He's done a great job, but it would seem fitting if he could try to get that one win, as he's pretty consistent over these last two weekends in Spain.
Yeah, very true. So Alex, so let's talk about Joan Mir. So Joan Mir finishes seventh, wins the world title. But Jason, to me, I watched like all the practices and stuff and qualifying. Joan Mir fell off on Friday, and I kind of thought that set the tone for him. Once he fell off, they were behind the eight ball in terms of what they wanted to accomplish. And I don't even think he made it to qualifier number two. He started pretty far back. He made an initial push, but then he kind of just fell into this rhythm of, okay, I'm going to have to win this championship. That's what it seemed like to me. What did it seem like to you?
Well, I think that it's a very strange weekend to be around. When you're in that position, like Joan Mir is, pretty cool headed guy, to see him fall off, I think that was kind of the talk about things. The problem that you have is that you've got to try to keep kind of the pedal down, because where he was starting, he put himself at a lot of risk. Being back in that 12th place, his teammate was 14th. I'm sure he would have definitely preferred to be up in those first two or three rows to get away as clean as he can, because Greg, we've seen it all year. So many things can happen mid-pack, I was really worried for him, to be honest with you. But neither one of the Suzukis particularly qualified, obviously, well. Rins couldn't even get out of Q2 or Q1 to get into Q2, which was just shocking considering what they did the weekend prior. So for me with Mir, I was actually a little bit nervous for him coming from 12th, even though we've seen him do that at Aragon and some of the other races. And those guys are really able to get the Suzuki in spots others can't. And they can move forward. The risk level going into Sunday's race for me, for Juan Mir, was pretty high. I was worried about him. Now, the only other thing that was really comforting in that is Quartararo was bad. So he wasn't like he was up on the first row or anything. And then his teammate was behind him. And those were really the two title contenders. So he could kind of keep an eye on those guys a little bit closer and kind of judge his race based off having a 37-point lead over those two guys being his closest.
Yeah, and you see Quartararo was what, lap one, maybe turn four or something. He went dive bombing in there, and he almost, I mean, he had to take evasive action not to hit Mir. And I was like, oh, man, that's the danger that you see in there, especially if someone's, you know, desperate and wants to throw some Hail Marys. And I could tell you
go ahead.
A great race was had by Taka Nakagami, by the way. And unfortunately for him, he's listed as not classified because when he passed for third place in the final corner, heading onto the front straightaway, he ended up tucking the front and throwing it down the road, which broke my effing heart for fantasy. Yeah. But I think that Nakagami is, you said it last week, he's the real deal. I think he has been for a while, but I think he's getting his way a little bit, chipping away at the direction he wants his 2019 to go. Yeah. So the next question is, you have Franco Morbidelli who wins on a 19 spec bike. You can clearly see it, all the Yamahas on the front straightaway. It's even different bodywork because of the way that they build the air scoop and everything. You have some of these riders like Nakagami, who's been outperforming everybody on a Honda on a 2019 bike. When is it, if you're Franco Morbidelli, where you go, hey, can I just keep this bike and not have the 20? Because I don't know if he's getting the 20 or if he's going full spec 21. I think he's going full spec 21. But dude, wouldn't you kind of sit there and be like, yeah, I don't know, I'm kind of good.
It's so weird. You see Quartararo come out and say he wants the 19 for next year. And then you see now Vinales is saying he wants the 19 for next year.
Oh, I didn't see that. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that. Sorry.
They're both saying that. So your point is well taken. And I think that when you look at it, who knows what's coming out for 2021? You got kind of all the Yamaha riders kind of shitbagging the bike right now, because even Rossi is saying that Yamaha's got to get to work. And when you look at it, it's, you know, there's a part of me where the bike looked pretty damn good those first two rounds in Spain. And I think it's kind of horses for courses again type of thing. Quartararo did amazing in Spain and looking, moving forward, everybody just thought that's it. Championship over. Quartararo is going to win, especially once Marquez was out. And really, Morbidelli for the longest time played second fiddle to Quartararo. And at the end of the year now, he's got one more win than does that of Quartararo on that bike. Quartararo is an interesting case to me because, Greg, I remember Moto2, a lot of inconsistencies. There'd be one weekend he's right there, the next weekend he's literally running 18th or 20th, and we're kind of seeing that towards the end of the year here. There's been a lot of weekends where he's not even the second best Yamaha on the track. And you know, there's a part of it is it a mental thing? Is it getting in his head that he was in contention? A lot of mistakes. I mean, what you saw him do there in turn two, it wasn't even close. Like, there's one thing where you run wide, but when the on-bike camera, I forget whose bike it came from, you probably remind me, but I mean, it wasn't even close. I mean, he could have cleaned out two or three guys going into there, and you want to try to make up time, but you also got to give yourself the opportunity to move forward. And you know, obviously we saw him make a mess of it, however many laps later, again. So, you know, when you look at it, it's more of a mental thing. And right now, Morbidelli is the guy. And at the beginning of the season, he was the fourth Yamaha guy, if you know what I mean. And now he's won three races. He's second in the championship and pushing forward.
I like him too. I love his demeanor, his post-race press conferences. I think he's got a really good perspective, Morbidelli and Mir. The one thing that COVID-19 has done and this season is really made us aware of some of the other riders that are in MotoGP, Morbidelli being one, Mir being obviously another one. Did you see the video that MotoGP posted was the interview from the first race, the Thursday press conference. They had the top contenders there, and they all gave them whiteboards, and they said, put down who you think the top five are going to be in the championship. Did you see
that? I didn't see that. I'd like to go back and watch that.
Yeah, it's in their, I want to say it's in their Instagram, Twitter feed, I'm sure. And it's posted a couple days ago. And of course, no one picked Mir. And, you know, you had the likes of Rins, you had Mark Marquez there. You know, you had, Maverick and stuff. And it's funny because of the guys that were there, most of them or half of them picked Mark Marquez. Maverick picked himself. But even when he picked himself, he was like, well, you know, Mark's going to be there. So it was kind of funny. I just think the psychological change of not having Mark Marquez in the paddock could have a sweeping effect on MotoGP. Mm-hmm. Meaning that now you have nine different race winners with the possibility of 10, which I think would break a record if someone new could win this weekend. But nine different race winners on this season, giving people heaps of confidence that they can do it. And now I think you're going to go into a season where 2021, where you're either going to have to go, oh, shucks, Mark Marquez is back, or you're going to say, you know what, I can race this guy. You know, and I think the mystique of him might be over for some people, and mentally that could be a big deal. Is Mark going to come back swinging? Of course. But what bike's he going to have? You know, have they evolved the 2020 bike into a 2021 bike enough to get away from what Mark wants, or have they stopped development just going, wait, let's wait till he gets back and gets healthy?
Yeah, it's going to be, I agree with you, it's going to be very interesting, and the intimidation factor of it goes away. I mean, we saw it for so many years with Tiger Woods. He was just so dominant that when he showed up, it was almost like everybody knew they were playing for second. There's been some really interesting things on TV about that this last week, just on the Golf Channel that I've been watching. And there's a perspective mentally when somebody is gone for a long period of time that everybody just continues to try to step up. And Marquez is the one, really, because these guys all chase lap times. Because he wasn't there, they're looking at race lap times and overall lap qualifying lap record times to see, you know, hey, we've got to continue to race against Mark even though he's not here. We got to beat his lap times from the year prior and do better. And I think that there is something to be said for that, Greg, as far as like how many people will feel like they've closed the gap or catching up to him, and there'll be more guys racing at the front. The neat thing about MotoGP this year is just the unpredictability of it. There's, you know, remember back, I mean, only what, 4, 5, 6 years ago, there was like four aliens, right? And now it's not like that anymore. Now on any given weekend, anybody can win. We've had eight different race winners. Miller was trying to be the ninth. And when you really look at it, it'll be interesting to see how the preseason testing goes for Marquez. With the Honda, like you say, with as many changes as they've made to make it more rideable for many others, like you say, Nakagami did a really good job this year. We saw Alex Marquez do well at a couple rounds. So, but I still think at the end of the day, they're not gonna wander too far off of what Mark wants, and that first test back will be interesting for him.
Mm. What do you think about this weekend? Any predictions for Portugal? As no one is trying to make any because it's such a Hail Mary at this point.
I think it's going to be a really interesting race to watch on a MotoGP bike. I've been there, never got to ride it. It's tremendously up and down, a lot of hills. So I think it's going to be an interesting race to watch. I think it's a bit of a toss up of who might do well. I think Miguel Oliveira is going to really want to go in there and win his home Grand Prix on the KTM. So KTMs have been really strong. I mean, again, this past weekend, Greg, you had another couple KTMs up there with Binder and Oliveira finishing fifth and sixth and Paul finishing third. I mean, you got three KTMs in the top six. We would have never probably even said that at the beginning of the year. So they're going to be probably pretty strong. I think the Yamahas will be stronger here. There's still a little bit to play for in the Manufacturers Championship as well. So it's not like everybody's going to be sitting on their heels because the championship is over. There's still some positions to be gained.
Yeah, second in points is one of them as well.
Exactly, in the top five there. And then you've got Suzuki trying to kind of do the trifecta, I guess you could say, of trying to get this Manufacturers Championship as well. And they're going to want to get both their riders up front again. So, man, predictions. I know Vinales said he loved the track. But again, Greg, if you don't get up front early here, if the Yamahas don't qualify well, I think this will be maybe one of the hardest tracks for them to try to go forward and pass people.
I think Sylvain Gintoli a couple weeks ago tested there on the Suzuki with a test team. So Suzuki goes in there with some really good numbers because obviously a huge part of the success of Suzuki and winning the world championship has got to, you know, go to Sylvain Gintoli because he's done a fantastic job. So I think they trust his numbers. I think they trust his speed. And so it'll give Suzuki a good idea of where they need to be. Wouldn't surprise me if Suzuki comes out on top 1-2 after Friday. And if that happens,
I agree with you.
If that happens, then I think there's a good possibility. You know, I mean, you know, it's that situation again, Jason, where the shackles are off, the championship's won. Now we're going to see, you know, maybe a free Joan Mir. And that's the thing I'm looking forward to the most, to see if he just throws all caution to the wind. All right, how about Moto2? Jorge Martin wins over Hector Garzo, which was great. Bezzecchi, Schroeder, Marini, Bastianini in sixth, Remy Garner seventh, Ben Schneider in eighth, Buliga in ninth, Baldessari in 10th, Joe Roberts 11th, Nagashima in 12th, Vierge, Sam Lowes, we'll talk about him and what a ride he had, and Augusto Fernandez rounding out your top 15. There were a ton of people that did not finish this race. What'd you think?
Well, there's a couple things that really come into play when you look at the Moto2 championship and you look at the Moto2 race over the weekends. In Spain, I think Sam Lowes came into this 2 weeks ago, and everybody thought, all right, you know, we got to put pressure on him to see what he can do. To me, I felt like he could ride with as little pressure as maybe one could at the position he was in. He'd already given up a race in Doha, had an incident in Austria and some other incidents along the way, and had a 6-point lead coming into it. And unfortunately, it all got a bit hashed up in the first weekend because he was running second. He's ahead of his nearest rivals and fell off. And that has definitely created a downward spiral, unfortunately. We saw Sam get off really big this last weekend in a free practice. Went to qualifying one. Had got through to qualifying two already by lap time, but with, you know, qualified 18th. So essentially, he, you know, kind of removed himself from being in contention for any victory this weekend. And you got a guy like Jorge Martin who goes out and wins the race. And when you look in the championship, Greg, he'd be right there had it not been for COVID getting in the way with him missing Mazzano. So there's some craziness going on here when you look at it. And at the end of the day, Fabio Di Giantonio looks like he's going on to finally win his first race. I mean, it just looked like he was finally going to win. He had a bit of a gap and he tosses it down the road and turns six on the last lap. Martin did a really nice job, obviously, to win. Bezzecchi seemed like he was going to be the guy that was going to really make up the most points. And at one point, looked like he was going to get a lot closer in the championship. He ends up falling back to third. So Marini, I believe, goes into the final race of the year. Isn't it Marini that goes into the final race of the year, G-Dub? I think with the points lead. No, Bastianini. Sorry. Bastianini goes into the final race of the year with the lead. It just seems like who wants to win this thing, you know? It's been a crazy season to watch. Bastianini ends up sixth over the course of the weekend. I don't know, man. There's so many things tossing up and around. And the whole time I kept on thinking and watching these races was I just kept thinking about Cambobie for 2021 and that consistency that he's always been able to show. I think he's going to do really well next year.
So yeah, Jay, the inconsistency thing is that's kind of a big deal. Like if I'm in the MotoGP paddock, I'm looking over there saying, wait a second, who can put, you know, a season together here? Sam Lowes has definitely been the most impressive. And man, when he fell off that bike, I was just so bummed for the guy, you know? And
yeah,
but you're right. I mean, Cameron Bobier, I think his ability to be consistent, and we've seen Cam Bobier in Moto America, Jason, have those years where he starts off the season a little rough, has the first couple races where he isn't, but then he strings together these series of wins. And I think the test is going to be critical for Cameron. So he's supposed to get on a plane here in the next few days and head over to Europe. They have a test on Thanksgiving Day. And there are still some concerns right now of COVID because there are places in the United States that are shutting down, places in Europe that are shutting down. My biggest thing for Cameron is I think, especially for his confidence, get to that test, get some good laps in, and then he's got time to think about it. You know, because he'll get the bike, he'll get the tires, all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, 100% right. And, you know, the person that I've kind of watched, and I've brought this up a little bit, the person I've kind of watched over there is Jake Dixon because he took a big shot on himself, and I don't think he was on the greatest team last year to get into the championship, into Moto2 championship, but he got himself there, came from Superbikes and BSB, And then this year has really shown himself to kind of go forward. Unfortunately, he broke his wrist, so he wasn't able to partake in the last couple of rounds. But he was kind of on a big upswing. And I think that that with this American Racing team and how well they've done this year with Joe Roberts. I mean, Joe Roberts was really moving forward nicely in this race as well. I mean, he'd come back as far as 18th, gets himself up to 12th. And I think that with setups and things like that, you're right, Greg. The test is going to be a big one for Cam, just so that when he puts his head on the pillow during the winter off months here coming up, he'll be able to at least go into next year, at least knowing where he sits kind of as far as what he can expect and going forward. So I agree with you. I think that test is going to be important. So let's just hope that everything will at least kind of stay the same so that he's able to get over there and do it. But I think Moto 2 this weekend, I think those bikes would be a lot of fun to ride around a track like Portimao. So, and it's all to play for. You got a couple guys there in for the championship. Bastianini right now, your points leader by 14 over Lowe's, who did get those extra two vital points that he needed riding as injured as he was. But you know, 14 points is a tough one to make up. I think it's going to take a little bit of a mistake from Bastianini. Moving on, Greg, did the Moto 3 race. I really enjoyed watching the Moto 3 race this last weekend. Raul Fernandez led this race for most of it. Three quarters of the race, he led it and had as much as almost a 2 second lead at times. But he ends up getting reeled in towards the end by Tony Arbolino, Sergio Garcia, who end up getting first and second with Fernandez third. Albert Arenas, your points leader now heading into the final round, he ends up fourth after a battle with Darren Binder, who ends up fifth. Dennis Onchu, Andrea Mino, Agura, your boy, ends up eighth. Masia, Alcoba, 10th. Then we have McPhee, Fanati, Nepa, Antonelli, Yamanaka, and Dennis Foggio. And I think the big takeaway so far for me in these last couple two weekends at Valencia is the inability of Agura to really get close enough to Arenas to put any pressure on him. I mean, I know how close these races are, but he's really missed out on a couple of big opportunities. Where, you know, last weekend, obviously, Arenas is out of the race early after contact. And then this weekend, man, Greg, he was just kind of right there in front of Agura the whole time. And Agura just couldn't close that gap down. So now we got, an 8-point lead going into the final race for Arenas. So, yeah, anything can still happen. But I just don't know if Agura's got the pace to do it.
I don't know either. And that's the thing that kind of bums me out. It is 8 points, but Agura's been consistent, you know, in terms of like he's been finishing. He hasn't thrown it down the road much at all, you know, where Arenas has been caught up in some stuff. So I think it's all Arenas is to play for. The only thing that might be out of his control would be some bad luck. But Iogura's, you know, if you look to next year, you have to say Iogura is going to be one of the championship like contenders for sure.
I agree. And I think he is, obviously he has been this year too, but he has done it through consistency. It's not like we've seen him on the podium week in and week out. It's really too kind of funny also. And I don't know if you noticed this, but obviously probably because I watch him a little, because I know you like to follow him, but it never really seems like Agura is able to go draft and buy guys down straightaways.
Yeah.
It just seems like the Honda Asia bikes, for whatever reason, aren't quite at that level, even though when you look at overall lap time or speed times, they're there. But a lot of that is just in the draft. But it's not like he can get by and actually draft by guys.
That is a bit concerning because I do see HRC people in his pit, you know, and I works like he's plugged into the Japanese racing culture there. He actually works at Arai Helmets. That's what he does in that's the off season. Yeah. And I know that Honda Asia stuff, the HRC. So that is a thing. And I don't know if that's down to crew, down to gearing, maybe the way he prefers it, or maybe not enough power. But obviously Honda in the race, you know, they went 1-2. So it's not like Honda's really struggling.
No, not at all. And, you know, when you actually look at it, it just seemed like Mino and him and Masia kind of all got into this little battle and they were dicing it up, but there was one point where they started to kind of bridge that gap a little bit. And then within the space of a couple laps, it just started to open up. And then even when Agura did get to the front of that battle, he wasn't able to kind of pull guys along and get close enough. So, you know, it again, when we head off to Portimao, Moto 2, Moto 3 are going to be really fun to watch. the gnarly thing about it for me is when you look at a turn, I guess they'd call it maybe turn three or four there, the start is going to be very bunched up at the beginning. They kind of go down a big steep hill into a fast right where everybody's got to funnel into it. Turn two is kind of another fast right, and then it's hard on the binders for turn three. It's going to be so key, Greg, that you don't get caught up on, you know, in certain little things, you know, as far as you got to qualify good, man, you got to get up in those front couple of rows. So it'll be an interesting weekend.
Hmm. Well, Jason, let's move on to some MotoGP fantasy, because your boy Chuck Axon whipped your ass this week. That's all I'm going to say.
I know.
I mean, whip, you know, your look, ass. If,
yeah. Well, what? If he's whipping my ass, I mean, you know, I'm going to just go ahead and admit that he did. But what does that say for you? Where I, you know, I tried to go back. I couldn't go back
don't,
far
don't
enough.
Don't drag
to see
me into this
were.
Stuff. First of all, Chuck scored 150.5 points,
yeah,
which I'm wow. pretty sure.
That's like top in the States. Top in.
Yeah, like, it was like number five in the States or something like that, or number three in the States, something like that. Chuck. Yeah. So he bumped his way all the way up to sixth place.
Wow.
You are in 13th, lucky number 13. And you had a good points haul, 147 points, which is really impressive. You must have been up there in the United States as well.
I had a decent weekend. You know, it's funny that I'm 13th, because the last time I looked, I thought I was 21st. So that's interesting. I don't know.
They
you
updated. Know funny yeah, is, they, it takes them a full they, day it, to sort things out and to update for some reason. Because initially, yep. when I looked, Chuck was fifth in our league, and now he's
that's
fourth.
That's what I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was 21st. And I'm like, wait a minute. How could I have got so few points? Because I knew I'd gotten quite a bit of points. And, you know, and I didn't question it. But yeah, that's so Chuck, I only got 3 points less than him. All right, I'm okay with that, because originally it said I got like 97 points or something. So it's the update, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it says you still have a turbo and Chuck's out.
Ah, yes, I do. Big, the thing is that what's he got on me? He's got
he has 1,257. You're sitting on 1,225. So
22 back. And I got a little turbo action.
Uh huh.
It's going to be an interesting.
You need
weekend
to turbo if you turbo the winner. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I had Taka Nakagami. I had traded for Taka because I thought he was going to have a great weekend. When he passed for third, I had Morbidelli and Nakagami as my gold. I was like, yeah. For a non-turbo, I was like, oh man, this is awesome. He's don't go for it here. What are you doing, Taka? No, no. Oh, down he went. Yeah. And I was like, oh man. So, you know,
it's
it is that,
bummer,
but
too.
That's one of the fun things about playing fantasy is that, you know, you watch racing and you like the people you like. And I try to be impartial in the MotoGP deal.
Yeah.
You know, and but now all of a sudden you're like, yeah, yeah. But dude, I slipped to position number Roger Hayden. That's how bad of a slide.
Did you really?
Yeah, I'm 95.
Hey, where's Rog in this? Because wasn't Rog up front in this for
Rog
a while?
Rog was up front for a while. By the way, somebody named MotoDog Racing has worked their way into second place. So it's Racer Russ sitting on top, then Moto Dog Racing, then NH69 has slipped to third. D Heath is in fourth. And then, let's see, Chuck is in sixth place. My boy Dan Yazza, dude, DJ30X has moved up to eighth place. I didn't think he texted me and started gloating about that, but let's see.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting last weekend. And
Roger,
you know, I don't know who I'm going to get off, who I'm going to get off this list. I've got a pretty solid team, so it's going to be interesting to see see who's going to be there on Friday, because you know, after free practice three, that's when this thing gets cut off. For a while, I thought it was free practice four.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my boy Kevin.
Some mistakes. Yep.
Yeah. Kevin fell back on this thing a little bit too. But it's been really fun doing this thing. I mean, it's been a lot of fun kind of interacting. And I really like, once you kind of get used to the way this fantasy league runs, I really like it. I think it's a fun thing to do. So I know we'll be doing it next year.
Yeah. And
I think that we need to look into like a, like we talk about it all the time, and it's November, so we should look into like some other ones too. Maybe a World Superbike one, maybe a Moto America one. That would be kind of fun to do. Figure out a way to do that, and because it is a fun thing to do.
It is. I mean, I have some contacts that know the people that do some of these fantasy leagues that have been slack about trying to get one going for Moto America, but I think Moto America one would definitely be fun. and a World Superbike. I mean, you know, Dorna owns MotoGP, so maybe this was a test bed and they're going to roll something like this out for World Superbike. And, you know, I should reach out to the people I know at Dorna and maybe there's a way that they can, you know, let us use this technology for Moto America. And I like the way that they've done this. I like the turbos. I like the fact that you have an overall budget and that each rider, you know, you spend. So with that, by the way, G, I'll tell you this. When I went to make a trade last week, I wanted to, I traded someone out worth, I can't even remember, you know, say $3 million. Mm-hmm. And I went to go get another rider. I went to get Rins, actually. I went to get Rins, but Rins' value increased because he was on fire, increased $300,000 from the week before. So he priced right out and I couldn't get him. So the fact that it's dynamic, that they don't just set the price for per rider at the beginning of the year and then it's that forever, you've got to kind of pay attention to what you have. So, you know, you have, I think it's a $14 million budget. And so like Quartararo was worth like, I don't even know. I think it was like maybe $3.5 million at the beginning of the year. Now he's worth $1.8 million. You know, Juan Mir's now $3.8 million when I think I picked him up for $900,000 or some crap. You know, it's and so it moves. Crazy, and so, you got to really figure out your budget. So
it's fun. That's been really the fun part, though, is like being able to do some of that stuff and kind of figure out where people are. And it's weird because I've not gone over budget all year. I've not even had anything flash up that I can't get that rider, can't get this rider. And, so yeah, and I think going into this, I've not had any KTM riders on my team this year. I've had no Honda riders on my team this year, but I've had like obviously Suzuki, Yamaha, Ducati riders on my team. So you know, Nakagami was a good choice there for a while, but my team has stayed fairly consistent all season long. I haven't really moved too many people around other than within the team. You know,
yeah, you go from gold to silver.
I think at one point, I think I had three Yamaha riders on my team at one point.
Yeah, so did I. And then I had to slowly work them off. And unfortunately for me, I still have one of the Yamaha donkeys on my team, but he's gone this last race. So
Yeah. Well, the donkey I had won last week, so that was all right.
All right.
So that's that'll be a fun thing for us to do again. You know, it's going to be interesting this weekend. I haven't really heard, I guess in our little text chats, we've had some little bit of shit talking with Chuck. So I'm coming after him. I only got 22 points. I'm coming at, seems like Uncle Skip is falling back there a little bit. So,
well, I've lost so big in MotoGP fantasy this year. I think I'm going to have to get a job, like maybe go be a greeter at Walmart just so I can pay my gambling bet or debt. I mean,
love it.
All right. Yeah,
pay that off, G-Dub.
So we got a race.
The leg breakers coming after you.
Look, you know, obviously COVID-19 is flaring up, folks, but there are events that are going on. So go check them out if you can. We want you to stay safe. If not, just watch them on your TV, tablet, computer. Follow them on, you know, Instagram or whatever. MotoGP finale at Portugal this weekend. It's set up to be spectacular, especially in Moto2, Moto3 with championships on the line. Anybody can collapse. Anything can happen. And then who's going to win another race in MotoGP? It's going to be great to watch. In the U.S., the Mid-South Cross Country is in Linville, Indiana. And the reason I bring that up, of course, is because we tell you stuff, but they're about halfway through the season and our boy Jake Lewis is leading his championship. I shot him a text and I was like, dude, let's talk about the series that you're running right now. And so he's leading the points halfway through the season. He got a new KTM 350 that he's really enjoying and he'll run that series all through the winter. So keep an eye on that. And also Jake kind of hinted that we might see him on the grid in Moto America again next season. That
would be the same.
Are you really? So that'll be exciting if we get him back in the series, but he continues to ride a motorcycle and that. So that's going on in Linville, Indiana. AMA West Hare Scrambles in, sorry, whoever you live here, it's Wileseville, maybe California. Is that how you say that? Okay. You ever heard of it? I've never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
And then the Baja 1000 stuff is going on. So there you go. That's our podcast for this one. It's a short one and a sweet one. But anything else you'd like to say on the way out, Jason? Let me ask you this. Are you going to get to watch GP this weekend or are you out at the racetrack? Like, what's your deal?
I am going to go to the racetrack tomorrow. Two-wheel track day is going to be at Willow Springs. So I've really enjoyed riding a lot lately. And, you know, I was like, what was it, Greg? Like maybe 3 weeks ago, I actually went to Fontana with Fast Track Riders. I hadn't been there in quite a while. I rode with Wes there and then I was at Chuckwalla for a couple times. Now I'm going to be at Big Willow tomorrow and then Button Willow on Monday. G-Dub, get out here and come ride with me, man. I need to get you out here.
Yeah.
But it's been fun riding. So I'm going to be home for the weekend, though, to watch the races for sure. So I'll be glued to the TV like the rest of you.
Well, congratulations to whoever won the Masters last weekend. I heard he had a lot of, what do you call those things, like strokes, or had a little bit less. I don't know.
Just I missed it. But I did get to see it. But I wasn't seeing it live. But yeah, Dustin Johnson won that.
All right. Say goodbye, Jason.
Later, G-Dub.